He changed the world by having an effect on literally thousands of young athletes in the United States and inspiring them to replicate what he did, which is take a knee during the anthem in protest of racial inequity and police brutality. And by doing so in places that range from Seattle, Washington to Beaumont, Texas, red states, blue states, I would argue that they created a map or a path that led us to the huge demonstrations that we saw in 2020 after the police killing of George Floyd. So I think that's the effect that I'm talking about in this book. It wasn't anything that Colin Kaepernick intended to do. It wasn't anything that was part of some master plan, but a lot of young, angry, disaffected athletes saw what he did and said, I can do that too.
We happen to be talking here in D.C., and this is not to put down Howard University football players, but you write about cheerleaders and others who didn't show the same fear as some of the players. They fearlessly took a knee.
Yes, I interviewed an amazing former Howard cheerleader named Sydney Stallworth, and she told her story. I actually spoke to several cheerleaders around the country. Something they all shared as cheerleaders was a belief that they had to act because their football team was not acting. They needed to make a statement because the football team, very understandably, given that on the college system, scholarships are only renewed on an annual basis, they felt like they didn't want to rock the boat. So cheerleaders said, okay, I'm going to fill that gap. I'm going to fill that vacuum, and I'm going to take a knee. That's very powerful, precisely because it's not something one might expect from someone who is supposed to lead cheers.
Can you draw an almost straight line between Kaepernick taking a knee and the Washington football team getting rid of its old name?
Yes, absolutely. And I come to that conclusion about the Washington football team changing its name, not sprouting from my own head or my own theory, but I've spoken to many indigenous rights activists who'd been working for decades to change the name. People like Susan Harjo, who's, you know, one of the original opponents of the Washington football team's former name. They all said, like, look, you know, we've been doing this work for decades. What changed the tempo of it dramatically was the Black Lives Matter movement, and then Kaepernick really bringing that movement squarely into the sports world. All of a sudden, people like Dan Snyder, there was nowhere really to hide. You were either on the side of racism or you weren't. And people like Dan Snyder, they did not necessarily want Colin Kaepernick. If they did, they would have signed him. But they did understand that the times for the old style names that drip with racial animus, like those days are done.
You know, if we were telling a stereotypical feel-good sports story in a movie or TV format, there would be the adversity and then there is the comeback. But in terms of playing in the NFL again, Colin Kaepernick has never been given another chance to do that. Do you think that makes the movement he created or contributed to all the more powerful, or does it give those owners a scary story to tell young players, watch out or you'll be like Colin?
Dimitri, it's honestly both. Colin Kaepernick not being put back into the league, not being re-signed, I mean, it becomes an eternal statement that he sacrificed something, and so other people are protesting as a way to honor that sacrifice. But at the same time, the reason why he hasn't been signed is that NFL franchise owners realize that Colin Kaepernick does have more value as a ghost story than as a quarterback. And to me, that's a pretty damning indictment of the National Football League, where the motto is supposed to be in the, you know, words of Vince Lombardi, you know, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Well, winning took a back seat to having, you know, player discipline, which is really what it's all about from the mindset of the NFL franchise owner. They didn't want any more protests or rebellions rocking the boat of their multi-billion dollar cash register.
Throughout these recent years, I wonder how moved or affected you've been by the fact that one of the athletes who quickly started taking a knee after Kaepernick was soccer superstar Megan Rapinoe. What does that say about her fight for disenfranchised people and where her head is at? She was very quick to follow.
Yes, she was. And I interviewed Megan Rapinoe for the book. But honestly, the Rapinoe story less moves me to chills or tears and more is yet another indictment of the system and of sports, because Megan Rapinoe, and she'll be the first to tell you this, has seen her profile burnished over the last 5 years. She's seen her profile grow dramatically in the last 5 years. She was able to be a star for the World Cup team. If Colin Kaepernick was in her situation, he wouldn't have even been allowed to play on the World Cup team. And so I think it's very interesting that she's seen her profile grow so dramatically over the last 5 years in her sport, while Colin Kaepernick, not to mention his former teammate Eric Reed, who I interviewed for the book, another NFL player named Kenny Stills, all of whom now are on the outside looking in when it comes to National Football League rosters, as opposed to Rapinoe. And I think that says something about racism and the differences between white people and black people in this country when they take part in this kind of protest that directly confronts Americanism and patriotism and asks that question, why is there a gap between what we're told this country represents and the lived experiences of black and brown people?
Would you recommend, Dave, that we study our national anthem fully, all the verses? And if we do that, what are we going to learn?
Well, I think we're going to learn that this is, and first of all, yes, I think that should be studied. And I think what we would learn is that this is an anthem that is a call to arms, is a call to war. And I'm not just talking about it because it says the bombs bursting in air. And it's also an anthem that has its roots in injustice. I mean, it was written in 1814, of course, by Francis Scott Key, who himself was an owner of enslaved people. And there's a verse, a third verse to the anthem that we do not sing and that is utterly unacknowledged, that chastises the British, you know, our adversaries in the War of 1812, for actually granting freedom to enslaved people so they would join their side of that war. There's a part of the anthem that's a defense of slaveholding in the face of liberation. And that's something folks should realize. The other thing that I think folks should realize is that the only reason we play the national anthem at sporting events is connected very strongly to ideas of war, that it played during World War II as a way to support the troops, but then the anthem kept going after World War II as a way to send a message to the country that we are on a permanent state of war footing against the Soviet Union. And then after 9/11, we've seen it amped up to an even higher pitch as far as the amount of patriotic verbiage at games, which led to a financial partnership between the NFL and the Pentagon called the Salute to Service, which required NFL players, they had never been required to do this before, to be on the sidelines, helmet in hand, during the playing of the national anthem. And so that very frontal kind of patriotism is what Colin Kaepernick initially was rebelling against.
Do you write about where things are going to go from here in terms of the high-profile platform of sports to further social justice?
Yes, I do write about it, and I believe that the genie is out of the bottle on this one, that athletes have realized that they have a social standing and a platform by which they can try to make the world a more just place, and it's difficult to imagine, no matter how many players are banned from playing in various leagues, it's difficult to imagine that changing or going backwards. Sometimes you can't go backwards, and I think this is one of those times.
I'd imagine you've encountered people who at least say they're horrified by police brutality, but still kind of think you should stand up when the national anthem is played somewhere. What have those interactions been like? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I always say to them, I say, I understand, and that's your choice. And the choices of others should be respected as well, because it is a political act to stand for an anthem, no matter what the anthem is. And if that's something you support, more power to you. You know, we have to be able to disagree without being disagreeable. But if somebody wants to protest and dissent in that space, then respect should be given for them to do so as well. I mean, I have some good friends who were just at a ball game over the weekend and they made the decision to not stand. And, you know, someone tried to pour beer on their heads. Like, that to me is just totally unacceptable. If we're going to have a country that's actually built on the basis of the freedoms that we claim to adore.
I believe you also wrote about police kneeling in solidarity after the murder of George Floyd and how grotesque a lot of people thought that was.
Well, yeah. I mean, grotesque partly because, you know, Colin Kaepernick's knee was juxtaposed in many people's minds with the knee of former officer Derek Chauvin and the knee he put on the neck of George Floyd himself. So to see dozens and dozens of police officers on one knee at a demonstration for a lot of folks struck at best as ill-timed. The other thing about it is, even if you want to look at it in its most charitable form, police officers going on one knee is a gesture towards peace. But people are not calling for peace. They're calling for justice. They're calling for change. And there's no bridge to be built if that's your call to arms. You need to see substantive change before you're talking about peace and building bridges. The one thing I would get across to folks is that young people should make you feel optimistic. I was not optimistic before I wrote this book. about speaking to all the young people, people my daughter's age, who's 17 years old, who were willing to risk ridicule, violence, or even worse, as high school students, and when we're willing to take a knee as a way to say to their community, what you think is fine is actually not fine, and we need to talk about it. I mean, that degree of courage in the high school context gave me a great, great deal of hope. And so if you feel like, you know, these are very pessimistic times in which we live, of course they are. And if you're feeling that pessimism, I think this book could be a good antidote for that.